Welcome to the Look for the Learning podcast, where leadership meets life and every story has a lesson. I'm your host, Artrell Williams. This isn't just another leadership podcast. It's a conversation space for the curious, a place where we unpack how leaders are shaped, not only by boardrooms and books, but by their hobbies, histories, side quests, and stumbles. Each episode, I sit down with people who lead in their own zones of genius, whether they're talent developers, team captains, parents, musicians, entrepreneurs, mentors, or the like. Together, we explore the moments that changed how they think, how they show up, and how they lead. Here, we believe leadership is personal, and learning, that happens everywhere. In triumphs, in failures, in traffic, at practice, and in the quiet moments nobody sees. So if you lead others or simply want to lead yourself a little better, you're in the right place. Let's look for the learning and see where it takes us. Joining us today is Jeff Weaver. It's a real treat to have this visionary on the show. Jeff, how did I do?
Did great. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. So the introduction there gives just a sneak peek into some of the things that you've done. But I also want to make sure that everything was covered. So what did I miss? Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that intro?
You know, it's been a long time career in L&D, right? So, I mean, starting all the way back at the beginning, my first gig was at Polk County Schools doing human resource development and national teacher board certifications, and then on to Disney, on to Target, and so on and so forth. And then, you know, the company I was with the last 15 years, JJ Taylor, and now on my own with Pebble and Your Shoe Consulting.
Nice. And so far, as far as your consulting goes, what are some of the offerings that you found people attracted to?
So my focus areas right now are what I would call culture crafting, the helping companies really understand how to holistically approach their culture from a compensation, benefits, team dynamics, and leadership perspective. That definitely is a big piece of it. Leadership coaching and being able to spend time one-on-one with leaders, both up-and-comers, maybe some who need a little bit of extra help, but really being able to dial into coaching with folks is tremendous. And of course, you know, the traditional instructor-led L&D and training is probably by far the most popular thing that I continue to get tapped into for.
Nice. I learned something from you today, and you and I have known each other now. I think we first met about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I appeared on your podcast. I think that was earlier this year. Time flies, doesn't it?
I know.
At the Training Magazine conference. So we've had a few conversations. I'm not quite sure, though, why today it was the first time that I found out that you have been a musician.
Magician. Both technically. If you want to get into music, we can do music too. I actually,
that wasn't in the prep conversation. A magician. Yes.
Yes.
So it just, I guess I can see it now. But I never picked you as a person that was into magic.
Well, I don't wear a button or go around, you know, with a rabbit in a hat on my hip that would tip people off. It is one of those hidden talents, I guess you would call it. Yes.
So how'd you end up getting into magic?
So I got into magic back when I was working for the Disney resorts in Orlando. And I'd always had a passing curiosity about it. My dad had always done a couple of little tricks as dads do for you kind of growing up. And, you know, we'd watched magic shows and specials on TV, David Copperfield, stuff like that. I'd always had sort of a passing interest, never really had an opportunity to get into it. But back in, oh God, I can't believe how long this has been, 25 years ago, that hurt. But back at about 25 years ago, when I was at Disney, they opened a magic shop at the downtown Disney West End that had just opened up. It was a little shop called Magic Masters, a company out of Atlanta at the time that no longer exists, unfortunately. But they opened up a shop there, And that was the first time I had had the opportunity to like walk in the door and purchase and try real magic tricks. And I started going there on my days off. The employee discount didn't hurt. And I would pick up a couple things, learn them, practice them. I just had a fascination. It really combined two loves for me, which was puzzles, right? And the ability to figure out how something works, and performance, the ability to entertain others. And so it appealed to those two parts of my brain, and I just kind of got into it bit by bit. And I really sort of hung around the shop to the point where they were pretty much were like, look, if you're going to be here this much, you might as well start cleaning something and work. And so eventually they hired me on part time as a cashier for them, and it just sort of snowballed up from there.
What I really appreciate is that this is something that you picked up in your adult life. So it wasn't that you were into, or at least not performing it while you were a child. This was something that you picked up as an adult learner. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that experience of learning something new like that as an adult?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I no, it wasn't something that I had done as a kid. It wasn't something that I never did magic in school, talent shows or anything like that. It was something that at first I really just picked up for my own. Again, it just appealed to me. I liked the puzzle. I liked learning how to piece something together. It was something new. I'd never really done anything that was that physical, tactile, that required the kind of nimbleness and handwork and things like that. Even when I was a musician, I played trombone, right? So I never had to learn how to do keys or valves or anything. So I had never really had the opportunity to challenge myself in my dexterity like that. And so that was certainly a big part of it, and being fun with that. And then, like I said, the performance aspect just always spoke to me, because performing I had been doing since I was, quite small. And that gave me a great opportunity to sort of take those two things together and mix it. I really did not perform for more than like friends and family for a very long time. It was really just something that I sort of did to entertain myself. I would, annoy my girlfriend at the time with it relentlessly. I would show it off to friends and family. I would entertain the nieces and nephews at parties. But it wasn't something that I really did outwardly until a few years later, up at college and then after.
And seeing it from a leadership perspective, you kind of got to respect that process, knowing that you're not going to be great right away. And as an adult, sometimes we do learn things that we don't want to share with other people right away. But then at some point, we realize that we're able to apply different teachings, things that we've learned in other aspects of life to this. And that's really what the Look for the Learning podcast is all about, is how do we apply leadership philosophies and concepts to things like this, our hobbies, our interests, and vice versa. And I'm sure there are several concepts and theories from magic that we probably could benefit from using in our leadership. And that's kind of what I want to unpack with you here today, is let's talk about how there are some similarities between doing magic and being a leader in organizations like you have been, from small family businesses up to Fortune 50 companies. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. So you've got a lot of responsibility. You've had a lot of responsibility in your life, and you've seen leadership from a lot of different perspectives. What are some of those similarities that jump out at you when you look at it from a magician's lens?
So I'll detour just a little bit, because I think you said something there that actually is worth pointing out. One of the most challenging things about learning magic is that there aren't a lot of great resources. It's kind of a you have to know, right? I mean, magicians famously are secretive about their techniques and their methods and their things. And so to even get in the door of starting to learn from others, which is how a lot of that knowledge is passed, you have to prove that you have a certain level of competency before you can even get into it. I joined a group when I went off to college. I went up to college in the Panhandle. And there was a group there, the Society of American Magicians, that had a monthly meeting. And I started to attend. And to even get into the group, you had to be able to get up and do a few performance tricks in front of them at the first meeting, or else you weren't going to be invited back, because it's this weird meta thing where until you know, you can't be brought it even in further to it. And it reminds me a lot of how a lot of managers, I think, lead and learn, especially in companies that don't have formal training and development programs and mentorship programs. It becomes this weird thing where it's like you're almost expected to become a leader before you're allowed to learn how to be a leader, right? Just in the same way that you're expected to prove that you can do some magic before anybody with experience and knowledge is willing to teach you everything they know. And so that is something that I think there's an interesting parallel there, because one of the things that I'm constantly challenging organizations on is, are you setting up your leadership and development programs in a way that doesn't just target your existing leaders or the leaders you just promoted, but are you creating that pipeline of talent down the line? Because otherwise, you're in the same spot. You're forcing people to take the job before they actually technically know how to do the job, and hoping that they've got a little bit of skill that you can build off of, which I think is just a fascinating little parallel in its own right, that you kind of have to know it to get into it. From there, so I did join a couple of groups and I started to learn more. And in hindsight, now, I've been able to apply a lot of lessons from magic into leadership and into training and into development and things like that. I think the first and most important one is that when you're doing magic on any level, we think of it as the art of audience attention, right? The first thing most people, when you say, "What do you think about magic?" People's first word that they associate with is misdirection, right? Well, misdirection is really just, it's not about fooling people per se. From a magician's perspective, it's about directing attention. It's, can I put your attention where I want it to be and keep it there, even if I'm doing other things? If that's not the most obvious parallel for leadership, I don't know what is. Because as a leader, my job is to take my team, put their attention on what matters most, even when I have other things that need to go on in the background. And I think one of the things that a lot of leaders make the mistake of is they don't realize how much their team is following their attention if they're not being careful, right? So magicians learn, for example, that if you're going to do something with a hand over on this side, don't look at it, because the audience follows your eyes. Wherever you look, they look. So if I don't want you to see what I'm doing, I have to consciously make sure that I'm looking one place while doing something over here. Leadership's no different. Your team follows your attention. Whatever you're paying attention to, they're paying attention to. If all you're paying attention to as a leader is your emails, your reports, your deliverables, your numbers, those are the things they're going to focus on. And if you wish they were focusing on something else, you got to ask yourself, what am I leading their attention to? And that doesn't mean that things like the emails and the meetings and all that can't go on. It's got to happen like a magician would, in the background, out of sight, not paid attention to, so that they understand my focus as a leader is here. That's where their focus is going to be. So one of the distinct lessons I think that magicians have an advantage of that leaders could benefit from is that ability to put our audience's attention where we want it, regardless of what we might be doing in the background. And that's something that, as a trainer, I've always taken very seriously as well, is I'm very cognizant and thoughtful about where is my audience's attention right now? What are they focused on? Even if I'm having to set up the next three activities or think about the next two or three slides that are coming, am I taking the time to make sure that I have the audience's attention where I want it? And am I thinking about audience attention at all times? It's a lesson from magic that I think anybody who's leading a group of people would benefit to understand that psychology and benefit from using those techniques.
That you've just blown me away already. Because I've experienced magic to a degree, probably as much as most people who are listening. But then I never really thought about the deliberateness of the attention and how you just mentioned that you want to make people look somewhere so that you can do something somewhere else where they aren't looking. But then also how profound that is that you, as a leader, have to be cognizant of the attention that you're giving to certain things, because where you're giving your attention, you're making them give attention by proxy almost. Is if you're looking over there, that's where they're going to look. And that's what it's human nature, I think, right? If we were
Oh,
walking down a path together and I look over there suddenly, then you're going to look over there too, even if I don't tell you to do so.
exactly. And that's one of those young leader blind spots. They don't realize that their team will focus on what they focus on. It doesn't matter what I tell my team to do, right? This is one of those things from a culture crafting, or especially in compensation. This is one of those massive mistakes that I see companies make all the time in compensation. So I'm like, if you're not getting the results you want as a business, I'm almost certain that your compensation is set up wrong, because the reality is employees are going to go where the money is, right? So if the money is compensating the correct behaviors, you're going to get the correct behaviors. If it's not, expect unequivocally that they're going to do what they're paid to do, no matter what you tell them to do. And a magician thinks like that. A magician understands that there are certain things that your human nature is going to draw your attention, regardless of what I tell you to do, right? Just because I tell you look up here doesn't mean you're going to look up here. But I do know that if I create motion in an empty space, you're going to look up here, right? So if I were to say, take a look over my top left shoulder, you may or may not do it. But if I just silently move my hand and start wiggling my fingers over my top left shoulder, your eyes are going to be drawn up. Magicians learn those types of psychological tricks in order to leverage them for magic performance. Leaders can use that same exact psychology to move their teams where they want to, right? It's motion, energy, attention. These things all work the same way. So as a leader, it's like your team's going to focus on whatever's shiny and getting attention and being focused on. If you don't understand that, you can accidentally create a lot of chaos. But if you do understand it, you can very intentionally create a lot of success at levels that most leaders don't even realize that they're paying attention to. Because, it's like you think you're focused on X, Y, or Z, but more often than not, you haven't really thought about where are you putting people's attention and where are you therefore putting their efforts.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you brought up things that we sometimes do as leaders that are not intentional, things that we don't deliberately do. And I often say that just because I use this analogy in class about jumping on the couch, because I got two kids that the couch is pretty fun right now at their ages. And my wife will not, she always tells them not to jump on the couch. She does not tolerate jumping on the couch. Whereas I'm like, you know what? It's cold outside. They got to get that energy out. So I don't necessarily tell them to jump on the couch, but I don't tell them not to. And so then there are times where when dad shows up, it's time to jump on the couch. But then when mom's around, they don't jump on the couch, right? Because it's just as important what we don't say to them or what we don't show them as it is what we do. And just because we haven't necessarily told our employees, in this context, our kids, to do something by not telling them not to do it is almost the same thing. And I never thought about it from that long-term compensation piece of it, because I, when you mentioned making sure that the compensation matches the behaviors that we're looking for, I've always done that with rewards, but I never really thought about how deliberate you also need to be with making sure that the compensation itself matches what we're looking for.
Oh, tremendously. I think the biggest offender that I see consistently, Artrell, is sales organizations, right? Because sales loves to go on commission, and that's fine. I think commission can be great when it's used correctly, right? But you got to ask yourself, if I set up commission, for example, that is based on, percent of profitability of the sale, what am I really setting my team up to do? I'm making sure they maximize profitability, because that's going to maximize their commission. Versus if I say, no, volume is more important, well, then I need to ask myself, if volume's more important, but I'm paying them based off profitability, where do I think they're going to put their time? They're going to put their time into profitability. So how do I change that to make sure that volume, if that's what I really care about, is most rewarded? Or if it's profitability, then it's profitability. Again, it can cut the other way, right? If you're more concerned about profitability, but your guys are getting paid a flat commission on every single unit moved, you've actually set them up in a way that volume drives their check, because they've got to move an additional unit to make more money. That disconnect will cause them to put all their time and attention on the wrong thing. And you see it all the time in organizations, right? It's companies say, this is what we care about, or this is what we want, or this is what we expect out of the role, and then scratch their head and wonder, why are we having to constantly spend so much time focusing people on it? It's like, you didn't build your compensation strategy correct to that. You didn't build your reward strategy to it. You can't thank people above and beyond for what's supposed to be part of the core job. You really do have to take the time to look at, are we aligned from the get-go? And that's outcomes thinking. That starts with the whole idea of what do I want the finale to be? And then I back into how I'm going to get there, which is very much how magicians approach building illusions and tricks, right? When we build a performance, we're always starting at the end. Where do I want this thing to end up? If I, it's one thing to make the ball disappear from my hand, but I don't have to worry about that part as much. There's 100 ways I can make the ball disappear. The real question I should start with is, where do I need it to end up, and how am I going to make that happen? So magicians build all their illusions thinking backwards. What is the grand finale? What is the wow moment that we're trying to achieve? And then we work backwards through all of our techniques on how we're going to get there. Companies and businesses who do the same can achieve those wow factor results. The ones that don't are going to leave the audience kind of going, what's going on here? Because, you know, mistakes get made when you don't approach it that way, or when you focus too much. One of the things I remember, because I taught a lot of young magicians, and I always used to say, it's the method isn't the wow factor, the reveal is, right? Nobody's supposed to know how the method works. It's not supposed to matter how you made the ball disappear. The moment isn't the ball disappearing. The moment is the reveal that it's gone and the reveal that it's back. And if you focus on those things, you can do it a dozen different ways behind the scenes. No one will care. Make it complicated, make it simple. It's, you know, magicians will oftentimes try to do really clever things. Those I always tease them. I'm like, so you're trying to impress magicians, not audiences, because audiences don't know and don't care, right? Like, I can watch Penn and Teller Fool Us, or I can watch a special on TV, and I'm going, all right, I know how that works. I know how that works. Every once in a while, I'll see something and go, I have no idea how that works. And it impressed me. But my wife, who's sitting on the couch next to me watching the same show, she is nowhere as impressed, right? Because she saw the same outcome I did, but had no appreciation for the detail that went into it. It's the same with comp strategy, or it's the same with job design. Who are you trying to impress? Are you trying to impress other HR practitioners at how clever you were with your comp design? Or are you trying to actually get the results you want? Thinking about the outcomes and less about the methods is important, I think, and often gets overlooked. But it is another one of those skills that magicians get taught when we're audience focused to, you know, think from that reveal, that wow moment, and work backwards.
That was a lesson in itself. That I'm gonna have to put that on the reel and segment that portion of the conversation, because so much jumped out to me there. And one of the first things I thought about as you talked about that, who are you trying to impress? As learning design folks, we often try to design something that we think is cool and don't necessarily take into consideration what the outcome needs to be, and or who would think it was cool, right? It's like, this is all for me. If I were the one taking the training course, I would get an A, but I'm not the one. And we talk a lot in gamification, especially, and learning design in general, about learner personas. And so trying to ensure that we are appealing to the right audience in this, that as a magician, you just put it into context that we're not necessarily doing this for other magicians. I'm going to get it right at some point. We're not doing it for other magicians. You're doing it for an audience of people who usually aren't magicians. I even have to apply that for a comedy, just thinking about putting together performances, not for the art of the performance, for someone who understands the art, but what they want to see is the outcomes. And you said the method itself isn't the wow factor, the reveal is. So that really stood out to me.
Short example. I'll try and keep it short, but I'll give you a short example that was always one of my favorites. So I had a mentor. He and I, you know, practiced together, learned from each other. He taught me a lot of what I would do over the years. And over time, as you know, we practiced and got to know each other well. You know, when he would show me a trick or I would show him a trick, we'd always start by, you know, if it was a card trick, offer to, you know, let the other one shuffle the deck, and then, you know, like you would with an audience member. And inevitably, he and I both got to the point where we just stopped. Like, if he offered to shuffle, if he said, oh, you can shuffle the deck, I'm like, I don't care. And the reason I didn't care was really simple, right? Because our relationship was at the point, I'm like, first of all, I know he can do whatever he wants with that deck, whether I shuffle it or not. He knows that if I shuffle that deck, it's going to be so thoroughly and truly shuffled that there's nothing he could do about it. And so it became this shorthand courtesy of like, if you offered it to me, I know the deck's legit. It's just a shorthand in my head that you didn't do anything to it because you know I could mess you up if I needed to. So obviously it was irrelevant. Except one day he's like, I got something new I want to try on you. He's like, all right. So he goes to hand me the deck. He's like, do you want to shuffle real quick? I'm like, I'm good. So then he starts doing a prediction and prediction card trick that blew me away. I'm sitting here, I'm lost, Artrell. I'm like, I know all the stuff that I should know to be able to figure this out, and I was completely lost. So finally, when he was done taking me for a ride, I'm like, okay, I can't figure this out. What did you do? And he looks right at me and he goes, I stacked the deck, which means he prearranged it in a certain order. And I realized in that moment, and this was the lesson, is that trick could not have worked on anybody else. That trick was for me because anybody else would have taken up on his offer and shuffled the deck. And the minute they shuffled the deck, they would have ruined it. He knew me and our relationship so well that I would pass, but in passing, that I would believe it was legit, that I would eliminate the entire possibility that he had just stacked the deck ahead of time. And he nailed me with it. And it was such a good lesson in thinking about your audience, right? That trick could never have worked for anybody but us in that moment. And he did that not for the, he didn't do that for a crowd. He did that for me and just to mess with me. And the lesson there was, could he have repeated that trick with other people? Yes, but he would have had to change how he did it. He thought exclusively about me as his audience and me as his person and executed it flawlessly for that. And the next time he does that trick for someone else, he'll change it up the way he needs to make it work for them too. But that's one of those key lessons for leaders about, are you thinking about your audience? Are you thinking about the person? How you lead one person is not how you can lead everybody else. Magicians lead people all the time. We lead you to take certain cards. We lead you to certain outcomes. We lead you to pick what we want you to pick. As leaders, it's the same process. We lead those around us, but everybody's different. There are some people I can lead in some ways, some people I can lead in others, and one won't work for the other one. That trick would have only worked leading me to it. But if he had wanted to do that same effect, that same principle for somebody else, he would have had to lead them there a different way. And I think that's another one of those things that magicians learn quickly is how to read people fast, how to decipher people quickly, and how to lead them in the way that works for them. There's another level to it that I am not on because I don't do this kind of work. But if you really want to find out about how you can read and lead somebody in an instant, talk to the guys that do stage hypnosis because they are absolute masters at figuring out how to trigger people in exactly the right way in a moment's notice. I've worked with a few of them. I can't do what they do, but they're phenomenal at it.
Please don't tell me that stage hypnosis is not real.
All hypnosis is as real as you want it to be, Artrell.
Oh,
That is the God's honest
come
truth. Hypnosis is kind of fascinating. You can't hypnotize someone against their will. It's not a lack of consciousness. It's a voluntary state of meditation. But what these guys can do to get you there instantly, it comes down to their ability to read people and to use the psychology the right way. It's legit. What you see is what you get. Those people are doing what they're doing. You just, those of us who know hypnosis know that there's two things. You can't make somebody do something against their will under hypnosis, right? So it's the that's the to me, that's the funnier part. You see that guy up on the stage clucking like a chicken, he knows he's doing it. He might be under suggestion to do it, but deep down, you couldn't make him do it if he didn't want to. But what stage hypnotists are amazing at is, and I met this one guy. He's like, when I start, he's like, I try to put the entire audience under hypnosis. He's like, I can read the audience to figure out who in the audience is going to be most susceptible to playing along and wants to put on a show. And that's who I bring up on stage. So it for them, it begins at that level of selection where they're like, I'm identifying the people that I know are most on this journey with me and are going to come give me the best opportunity to put on a show and do that. Imagine as a leader if you had the ability to read people that hard and that fast. Imagine as a sales professional if you could walk in the room and know exactly who was most amenable to your message, your style, and your closing techniques. NLP practitioners, the guys who do stage hypnotism, that's exactly what they're doing. If they turned their power from stage hypnotist into professional salesman, I mean, they'd rule the world. I don't know what they're all thinking doing stage shows, because they could walk into a room full of people and tell you exactly who needs to be closed in which way to get it done every time. And they would. It's the same fundamental techniques.
My mind is blown. I don't know if I'm impressed or disappointed about certain things in life at this point. What I don't want is for the society of stage hypnotists to come after you or me as a result of this conversation. You already hit me to this society of magicians, and I'm like, okay, is it okay for me to ask more questions, or should
They
I
have a
just?
website. It's fine. You if they have a website, I'm pretty sure they people know they're out there. But
Okay.
I'll prevent us from being on anybody's bad side, I promise.
The last thing I need is for them and the student loan people to be looking for me.
I'd be much more afraid of the student loan people.
There were a couple instances that you mentioned focus, and it's something that I have an obvious, there's certain things about leadership that we know obviously requires focus or obvious applications of focus. But then you mentioned it in a few different contexts that I'd like for you to speak a little more on about how we need to use focus at leaders and ways that we can be deliberate about the focus in order to ensure that the people that we're leading are going the way that we need them to go.
Yeah, I mean, it magic is fundamentally all about controlling attention and focus. And so there's a lot of different techniques in that, but a lot of them are perfectly applicable. We talked about some of the sillier ones, but let's talk about, repetition as a focus tool, right? So one of the things a magician will do is they'll use repetition and anchoring very deliberately and very, excuse me, very intentionally. So very deliberately, very intentionally, I will say certain phrases, or I will repeat myself in multiple times and ways, or with slight variance in ideas that I want to make sure come across. So a magician uses that repetition to create certainty and importance. If I tell you that there's nothing up my, the classic magician line, right? If I tell you there's nothing up my sleeve, some people are going to be suspicious. But most people are going to accept it. And if I tell you that every single time before I do something that there's nothing up my sleeve and I prove it, eventually you're just going to take it as rote that there's nothing up my sleeve until the one time that there is and I've used it against you. Right? So that's how a magician thinks. But repetition and anchoring are two of the most important things that a leader can do to weigh focus and importance for their teams. What you talk about daily is what they care about. Where you focus is where they focus. Repetition and anchoring are massive, right? So one of the things I always taught my leaders is you need to think about every meeting you have, what are the things you want to talk about every time, because you never want them forgotten. For us, it was things like, there were core values that we wanted to speak about. Safety was a huge consideration on the job. And I believe deeply in creating a culture that focuses on recognizing the positive. And so when I taught my leaders how to run meetings, I always explained to them, like, you need to start every meeting with recognition, safety, and core values. First three things you talk about every single time. Why? Well, anchoring. If those are the first things out of my mouth, my team assumes they're the most important. Why would I wait till the end to tell you something important? Human brains, the way we're wired, we have to prioritize things. So first is the best. That's just the way it works in our minds. Whatever comes out of my mouth first at a meeting is the most important thing, whether I want it to be or not. It is, because I said it first. So if the first thing I say is, let's talk about recognition, who did well last week, then my team is going to learn that in that moment, the most important thing to me was recognizing good behavior. If I open every single meeting that I have with them, and the first thing I say is, who's got some recognition they can share? then the repetition plus the anchoring over time cements for them the idea that the thing Jeff cares about the most is recognizing others. So what's going to happen after the second or third meeting that I do that? Number one, they're going to start bringing recognition to share because they know I'm going to ask them, right? I've said it. They're going to have it ready to go because they know it's going to be first on the agenda. And two, if they want to get in my good graces, they're going to do things for each other that will hopefully get recognized at that meeting. So if you want your team to work more collaboratively and be more gracious and courteous and helpful to each other, start every meeting by making them recognize each other's good performance. The next thing I want them talking about is safety because I want it top of mind. If I start every meeting before I talk about the numbers, the sales, the results, the outcomes, if I start by talking about safety, where does that put safety in the list of my importance? It's top two now, right? So again, my team over time, if I'm consistent, repetition plus anchoring, it's always at the top of the meeting, it's always on the agenda. They're going to learn that's importance. So it's a simple technique that magicians use, and we may only see you for 5 or 6 minutes. So we may not have a lot of time to be able to use this. But as a leader, when you're managing people for weeks, for days, for months, for years, your consistency and how you prioritize things creates everything about your culture. What you talk about first, that's most important. What you talk about every single time, that is consistently important. So that's a lesson that every leader can benefit from, right? And whether you're a learning leader or any other kind of leader, as a learning leader, I never finished a training that didn't end with, what did we learn about? You have to share your learning before we move on to the next new idea, the next new concept. In doing that, my learners all learned over time. It's like, if I can't reiterate my most important key thoughts, we're not getting to the next thing. That matters. Eventually, they know that while they're listening to me, they better figure out what one thing they're going to talk about at the end because I'm coming to them and they're going to have to answer it. So, again, repetition and anchoring, two very simple magic techniques that are absolutely invaluable for people who want to lead and focus their team's attention and behavior.
And that anchoring not only does so for the learners or for the people on our teams, but it also does it for us as leaders, right? If we are deliberate about it, even if it's something that we don't currently do before we go into this exercise or activity, we can form that habit within ourselves while showing them how to form that habit. So when we
Yeah,
teach
one.
else that technique that you just mentioned, and you say, I want you to dot dot dot. As long as they keep that top of mind, if you put it in your instructor materials or the beginning of your meeting agendas or whatnot, then they're learning that each meeting should include that. And then when you happen to pull that away at whatever period of time for whatever reason, it's still anchored, as you mentioned.
Oh, 100%. And then it also, if you really want to get to level two of that, it also gives me the opportunity to leverage that when necessary to create the purple cow moment, right? So let's say I get them used to every single meeting starts with recognition and safety. Every single meeting, those are the first two things we talk about. The 1 week of the year that I talk about something different first, I can elevate that thing's importance to, DEFCON 5 status right there, DEFCON 1. I never remember if it's DEFCON high or low. But if I want to make something more important than I can possibly imagine in their minds, all I have to do is bring it up before those two things. Because now, immediately, because I've trained them through anchor and repetition that those two things matter most, if something were to jump in on the agenda, it overwhelms their, oh my, this is more important than recognition, more important than every week we talk about these two. And now this is more important. I better pay all my attention right now because for Jeff to break the cycle and break the pattern and do this, whatever he's talking about now must be really important. But you only earn that moment when you've set that foundation of all the others. And again, that's magic 101 is if I create a pattern, the break in that pattern becomes an opportunity to do whatever I need to, leverage it to do, whether it's change your attention, move your attention, focus, surprise you, delight you, whatever it is. But anchoring and repetition and then the very strategic use of it in the reverse are just incredibly powerful magician's techniques that apply to every leader and ourselves. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't want to overlook that distinction between the anchoring and patterns, because they can be looked at in some instances synonymously, but then there are instances where they don't necessarily go hand in hand. And for anybody who thinking about it the way that I just was when you were describing it, patterns are also important. When we get into a pattern and people know that consistently, this is something that we do. Consistently, this is an expectation of me in these meetings. So then you've pretty much caused them to do that thing. You've caused them to be ready to have recognitions ready at the beginning of each meeting. You've caused them to have some learning to share at the end of your sessions. So those patterns become really, really important as well. And yes, in magic, we see how it's applied in that context. Hopefully, others are also thinking about opportunities in their own lives of how they can use the patterns, the anchors, the repetition in order to form habits within their teams or just influence behaviors. I almost said manipulate, but nobody manipulates, right? We form habits.
You know, I mean, the difference is intent, right? If I'm forging habits that are creating positive outcomes and positive results, it's the same technique and tools that I would use to manipulate you into doing something against your interests. And I think that's a lot of the parallel lesson between magic and other types of leadership, right? Is it's what are you using it for? Every magician learns techniques that could, you know, if used for the wrong purposes, I mean, there, if you study the history of magic, I mean, guys have used magical techniques to start wars and topple kingdoms. And it's the same stage trickery that was used to entertain galas. So intent matters. And maybe that's another parallel to leadership, right? Is that are you manipulating people or are you know, building people's, you know, routines and habits. I guess it comes down to intent and outcome in a lot of ways. If you're doing it for the right reasons and the right ways, then it's a positive. If you're using these techniques to trick people or deceive people or, you know, put them into to harm's way or to take advantage of them, then it's not. So, you know, it's these techniques are they're like nuclear power. They can be used for good or for evil.
Before we got into the conversation here, you shared with me that magic took you to the job that you ended up being at last. So
Yeah.
I definitely get more details about how magic ended up getting you a 15-year career at an organization.
After I left Target, I took about a gap year and I was working on some independent projects and trying to see if I could start a small business. And it didn't really work out. But in order to supplement my income that year, I worked full time at the magic shop there in Orlando. It was one of the 2 times that I worked there full time. I worked there for many years part time, but for a solid year, I was there full time. And I learned so much, and so much of what I know and apply in a lot of ways came from the lessons learned there. But I also, of course, learned how to do a lot of really cool magic tricks. And I was entertaining people every night, and I was performing on a regular basis. And so I had a whole bunch of stuff up my sleeve. And I started getting back, I knew I wanted to get back into the L&D world. And so I started putting together some independent L&D stuff, some trainings, because I'd been out for at least a year. And I wanted to move into a different kind of role than I had done previously. And I knew I needed sort of a portfolio, if you will, but I didn't really have anything like any good video or tape of me training and doing stuff. And so, because I was immersed in the world of magic, I wrote up a training. I still actually do this. It's a training called How to Hide the Elephant. And it's a training that I teach salespeople about using magic psychology in the realm of sales and closings. And as part of that presentation, because it's fun, I do a few magic tricks. And one of them is I made a Coke bottle disappear in a paper bag. And one of them is a simple little color trick that I do. And anyway, I had done these and I had done it for a small local volunteer group that allowed me to videotape it as well. So when the opportunity came up to go to my last company as their head of training and development, they asked for video of me performing. Like, we need a portfolio sample. We need some kind of video of you training. And the only thing I had was this piece that I had done, How to Hide the Elephant. So I sent it to them and I ended up getting the interview. I ended up getting the job. After I'm there, one of the HR managers came to me and said, "You have to tell me how to do the bottle trick." And how did you got to tell me how you made the bottle disappear. I'm like, sorry, can't do it. Magician's code. And she's like, well, she's like, you should know. She's like, that bottle trick is what got you the interview. She's like, we got so many tapes and so many people applying and all these different. She's like, that was so memorable and distinct and different. And it captured our attention and it made you seem fun and different in a way from all the others. The reason we brought you in was we were hoping you would do magic tricks in the interview because we had seen you do them on the tape and we were fascinated by it. And so I did it because I was trying to showcase my selling training skills and all that. But in the end, it was the memorability. It was that something different. It was that something surprising that ended up getting my foot in the door that got me a career that, lasted 15 years and brought me to the levels that I've been at. And all because I made a Coke bottle vanish from a bag, which, not even really that big of a magic trick in the magic world, but man, did it did the job for what it needed to. So yeah, you never know where stuff like this can take you. And I think that's part of, again, one of the lessons to me was those moments of delight, those moments of fun that magicians live for, finding ways to incorporate them into other things can pay off in ways you wouldn't expect. The goal of every training is to be memorable, right? We all are fighting the Ebbinghaus curve. We're all fighting the fact that from the moment people are done training and they walk out the door, they are forgetting everything they just learned. You know this. I know every trainer knows this. Magic, what I learned doing magic was I would show somebody a trick on a Friday night, and 4 days later, they would come back into the shop and go, "Okay, I haven't been able to stop thinking about that. You got to sell it to me. I got to learn how this works." In magic, we have a phrase for it. A magician named Mike Close said that a great magic trick will gnaw at your brain for days afterwards. It's the gift of a pebble in your shoe. And that's how I founded my consulting practice. And that is the basis of the name of my consulting practice, is that great training, great learning has the same effect. It is the gift of a pebble in your shoe. It makes you a little uncomfortable and it digs in a way you can't ignore. And ultimately, it spurs you to take action. You have to do something about it. You can't just let it go. If you train people, if you teach people in the best way possible, you are giving them the gift of a pebble in their shoe because it is something that will stick with them for days and ultimately force them to change something about their life, hopefully for the better. And so that is probably the greatest lesson I learned from magic, is that when you do it right, it sticks with people long after they should have forgotten it. And in a world and in an industry where we are constantly fighting the how do we get people to be remembering what they saw and what they heard, magicians have figured it out. They can get people to remember. I had people to our trail that would come back a year ago. They would take a Disney vacation every year and they would come back in and they go, "Okay, we were here last year and you showed us this thing and I got to see it again." And I think of that all the time as a learning practitioner. My goodness, what would it mean to me if someone I trained a year ago were to walk up to me and go, "That thing you taught me a year ago, it's still on my mind. I still remember it. It still matters to me." That is the gift of a pebble in your shoe, is when I can give you something that has stuck with you and changed you that much for that long. And so it's the greatest lesson I ever learned in magic that applies to this, is if you really want to make L&D magical, find ways to give them something that they can't forget and they can't ignore, and that long after they leave your classroom has stuck with them. It is the gift of a pebble in their shoe.
Wow. That was about 4 minutes of passion. And I only say that because now I want to know magic tricks. Like at the beginning of our conversation, you said you had a girlfriend at the time. And I was like, ah, he didn't have a girlfriend if he was out there doing magic in college. Like, there's no way.
I know. As the joke goes, you know the difference between a magician and a large pizza?
I gotta hear it.
A large pizza can feed a family of four, right? So it's or you know it's not a lucrative career. It's not a, in fact, for me, it was never a career. It's a passion and a hobby. But you know, the whole basis of what you're doing here that I love so much is that it's the passions and hobbies that shape who we become, and what we take from them, it becomes part of the mosaic and it leads us to these bigger things. I wouldn't be the trainer and instructional, you know, guy that I am today. I wouldn't be the consultant I am today if it wasn't for magic. That foundation of capturing attention and teaching in a way that is meaningful and memorable, that all comes from a hobby that I still tinker around with and still play with from time to time, but has never been more really than a hobby. But it's a hobby that's impacted every part of my life.
Yeah, and that's what I want to impact, unpack during these conversations. It made me think of when we were coming out of the unexperienced phase in our life, right? And you kind of hinted towards it where people would say, "What experience do you have?" And at 22, I said, "How do they want me to have experience in the job that I'm trying to get if they won't give me the job that I'm trying to get?" And I learned through the course of my career that the experience doesn't necessarily have to be in a job, and that we can communicate it through these other things that we've done in life. And so one of the other things that I hope to accomplish through this is to help people see that when they were a magician early in their life, or when they were a basketball player or something like that, it's not just the sport. There are other concepts at play, and we can use that on our resume. So if someone says, "Tell me about your leadership skill," and I haven't had a leadership job per se, but I was the team captain for the last two games of the season or something like that, that's still experience. Even if in our minds it might be minor, because in the scenario that I just described, there are other games in the season that somebody else might have been the team captain. It wasn't my role per se, but he got sick that one time and I was able to step in and it worked. Or maybe it didn't work, but I learned something from it and I can communicate that in the interview that I may have for that role. So it's really about looking at those other experiences, because our experiences, our leadership experiences, don't only come from our jobs, but a lot of it does come from our lives. And you've done an awesome job today of showing me how it can come from magic, which I never expected. I did not expect to get as much as I did. When you said that that was something that you were interested in, I wanted to know more, but I would have never put it into the context and packaged it the way that you did. So I really do want to thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Oh,
Just
absolutely.
to wrap up this discussion that I've got all kinds of notes for now, is I'm going to write a book about Jeff Weaver that Jeff Weaver doesn't know about. How do people get in contact with you? If I want to know more about A Pebble in My Shoe, or if I want to know how you can help me within my organization, tell us a little bit about that and how to get in contact with you.
Start at the website, apebbleinyourshoe.com. You can find me there, get in touch with me there, see all the stuff that I'm working on there. Easiest and best way. Email is jeff@pebbleinyourshoe.com as well. So feel free. Yeah, reach out, hit me up. Let's talk. I'm excited to be working with as many people as I can now in this new phase, and take all these lessons that I've learned and acquired over the years and bring them to a much new and wider audience than ever. So, apebbleinyourshoe.com.
All right. And before we close out, what would you like to leave the listeners with today?
I think if there's one thing in magic that can apply to leaders at any level, it's intentionality. Everything a magician does is with intention. We think about every bit of the performance, every aspect of the performance, every step of our tricks from beginning to end. Everything a magician does is intentional, right down to where we look, how we dress, what we say. It's all very thought out and planned. And I think that more leaders would do well to learn to be that intentional about what they do and who they want their teams to be and who they want to be as a leader. You know, there's a big push in today's culture for authenticity and things to be raw and feel real. But I don't think that means it can't also be intentional. And I think if there's anything that magicians do exceptionally well when they're great that most people don't realize is they are intentional about every bit of their actions and their outcomes. And I think more leaders would really, really benefit from taking the time to think through everything they've got going on and to be acting with intentionality in all that they do.
Awesome. I appreciate it. And when you said everybody, you started out your summary by saying everybody needs to. And I thought you were going to say that we all needed to go out and learn magic tricks. I'm like, okay, you might be stretching it a little bit, buddy, but to be able to encourage others to be intentional in their leadership, in the way that they lead and influence others, is a great message. And I appreciate it. Thank you,
Well,
Jeff.
thank you, Archel. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely. So you have been listening to the Look for the Learning podcast, and I've been your host, Artrell Williams. If you're anything like me, you started out looking for the learning and you found a whole lot of it here today with Jeff Weaver. I really appreciate you listening. We'll see you next time on the Look for the Learning podcast.